I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helby, your host at www.holistichealthshow.com and BBS Radio Station 3. My first guest is Sadhguru, who is a mystic, yogi, visionary, and spiritual master. His speaking engagements have taken him around the world, and he is widely sought after by prestigious global forums to address issues as diverse as human rights, business values, and social, environmental, and existential issues. He has been a delegate to the United Nations Millennium Peace Summit, a member of the World Council of Religious Leaders, and a special invitee to the Australian Leadership Retreat, the Telberg Forum, the World Economic Forum at Davos in 2006, 2007, and 2008, the World Presidents Organization, and the International Conclave of Young Presidents Organization. He also was interviewed in the movie One. He has earned the reputation as a speaker and opinion maker of international renown. More information can be found at www.midnightswiththemystic.com and www.ishafoundation.org. Joining him is Cheryl Simon, a spiritual seeker and CEO of several businesses, who co-authored with Sadhguru the recent book, Midnights with the Mystic. Sadhguru, I'm happy to welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, and I have three questions I wanted to ask you before I talk with Cheryl.
Okay. So you decided I'm incapable of more than three.
No, I promised. Oh, yeah, I promised Jayanthi that I wouldn't keep you very long. That's why I said three. She kept saying, you know, you're not going to keep him very long now, are you? And I said, no. First, many of us want to become better people, more loving with our fellow man, and more concerned about the environment. How can we accomplish these goals and make this a better world for all?
This is an aspiration that's there in every human being, but we're always trying to work at it from the wrong end.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense, people are trying to be loving, people are trying to be good. But if you look back on your life, Carl,
mm-hmm.
or any human being for that matter,
mm-hmm.
If I happen to meet you when you're very, very happy and joyful, I'm sure you're a very loving, generous, wonderful human being, aren't you?
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is true with every human being. If I happen to meet you or if I meet anybody when they are in a state of unhappiness or frustration or something else, some sense of unpleasantness within themselves,
mm-hmm.
that is when they could be nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no point trying to be loving, trying to be pleasant to somebody else. When you're feeling pleasant, you're naturally pleasant to everything around you.
Mm-hmm.
So the fundamental thing that human beings have to work towards is to make ourselves into truly blissful and joyful human beings.
Mm-hmm.
We've always tried to produce good human beings, which has not really worked. When people are joyful, they're all wonderful human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Joy is one insurance against all evil.
Mm-hmm.
Joy is the best insurance against all evil. Because with morality, with ethics, people will always find ways to, you know, subvert those values.
Mm-hmm.
But when a human being is feeling joyful, when he's feeling very pleasant within himself, he is naturally nice to everything around him.
Mm-hmm.
So my whole work is just to bring that about, to make human beings into truly blissful human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the best insurance we have.
Mm-hmm. Then, in holistic health, we recognize that the body is polluted from the air, the food and the water that we take in. And some of us teach the use of a variety of foods, vitamins, minerals, chemicals, and mental processes, such as meditation and affirmations, to detox the body. Are there spiritual activities that we could use to facilitate this process with people whose bodies are overloaded with toxins?
Definitely there is. In the sense, they essentially body, whatever the body that we carry right now,
mm-hmm.
though we have given the raw material from outside in
mm-hmm.
the form of food, it was created from within.
Mm-hmm.
So that which creates the body is within us, or the source of creation is within us.
Mm-hmm.
if you have access to that. See, if you eat a banana, over a few hours, this banana becomes a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So this food transforming itself into a human form is not a simple thing. It's a great phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
But such a fabulous phenomenon is happening for most people in unawareness. They are not aware of this, as to how this happens.
Mm-hmm.
If you become aware of this, you also have access to that dimension which is a source of creation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the opportunity that every human being has, either to exist here as a piece of creation or to exist here as the source of creation.
Mm-hmm.
If you are the source of creation, or if you are in touch with the source of creation, do you really have to worry about your health or your well-being?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a little bit of a repair job to do, would you go to the local mechanic or to the manufacturer? Definitely, if you had the excess, you would go to the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
If you lost excess, you would go to the local mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So, instead of just looking at health as a separate aspect of life,
mm-hmm.
if we look at life as to how life is happening, and if you're in touch with the fundamentals of that, health is a natural outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So, a spiritual process means just this, that you are not looking just for another piece of creation, you're looking for the source of creation.
Mm-hmm.
So if that process is on in a human being, health is very naturally taken care of.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at something in front of my desk that someone gave me recently, and it says, I always know God will not give me more than I can handle, but there are times when I wish He didn't trust me so much. That was from Mother Teresa.
Okay. So many things badly handled then.
Right. My third question is, if enough people hold high spiritual ideals through prayer, meditation, yoga, and affirmations, and bring the body into perfect alignment with appropriate foods, deep breathing, right thinking, and so forth, is it possible to influence the physical and social environment in a positive way?
Definitely, yes. It is just that most of the time, belief systems are passing off as spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm.
See, the moment you believe something,
mm-hmm.
you are bringing a certain rigidity into your system,
mm-hmm.
which is not a spiritual process. If you believe this is it, then you are bringing a certain rigidity
mm-hmm.
into the very life process that you are.
Mm-hmm.
So spiritual process is always seen as a quest, as a seeking.
Oh.
So that's why when you say, I'm on a spiritual path,
mm-hmm.
you say, I'm a seeker. When you say, I'm religious, you say, I'm a believer.
Mm-hmm.
There is a significant difference, because believing means you have assumed something which you do not know.
Mm-hmm.
Seeking means you have realized that you do not know,
mm-hmm.
which is enormous amount of flexibility. Whenever you see I do not know something, you are a very flexible human being.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you think I know it, you become a rigid human being.
Mm-hmm.
So this rigidity is not just in attitude. This rigidity just percolates into every aspect of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And this rigidity is a cause of enormous amount of suffering in the human environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is no such thing as society. There is only you and me, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There are only human beings. Where is the society? Society is just a word. How human beings are, that's how the society will be. So, definitely creating human beings who are flexible and willing to look at things rather than being stuck in things definitely makes a different kind of society.
Mm-hmm.
And the very energy that they carry will definitely influence everything around them.
Mm-hmm.
You can see even animals and plants respond better to you when you're in a certain way.
Right.
You can distinctly see this happening.
Mm-hmm.
Except some people.
Right. You always make people think, I saw you in the movie One about a year ago, and I couldn't grasp it in one viewing. I had to go back and watch it a second time. But I like people that stimulate my thinking and make me think about things. Of course, maybe that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe I'm supposed to be just blanking my mind and not thinking.
By thinking, see, thinking is just recycling of what we already know.
Mm-hmm.
The information that we already have, we're recycling it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not by thinking that one becomes spiritual. It is by enhancing one's perception.
Hmm.
So that enhancement of perception is the whole work.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about believing something. This is not about looking forward to something. Because only what you perceive you know. Rest is all imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole process, the spiritual process, is essentially about enhancing one's perception.
Mm-hmm.
If your perception is enhanced and enlarged, naturally you see and know much more than what you know about life right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that we need to do to enhance our perception.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate this very much, and I'll talk with Cheryl now.
Yeah,
and
thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cheryl is here.
Hi, Carl.
Hi, Cheryl. First, you and Sadhguru published the book, Midnight with the Mystic, and
right.
It's receiving rave reviews. Can you tell the listeners the premise of the book?
Basically, the book kind of captures the heart of a seeker, what it is we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's trying to find out what their life's purpose, who am I, where did I come from, and that thirst or that longing or those questions
mm-hmm.
that we have starting when we're young that don't go away. Some of us bury and some of us aren't able to bury.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what is that? These people are thinking, well, maybe, you know, I'm destined to do this thing and there's something I'm missing, or if I, you know, just the whole, what is this about?
Mm-hmm.
The whole, what does it mean to be a seeker? What is it we're trying to find out? What is it we're trying to do? Where are we trying to go?
Mm-hmm.
So it captures the heart of the seeker.
Mm-hmm.
So the first chapter of the book is just my story of my seeking got kicked off with a classmate dying when I was in first grade and me becoming aware of the fact that I was mortal.
Mm-hmm.
And I never liked being mortal, and I still don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in our country, we kind of have a conspiracy of silence going where none of us admit that this is a temporary experience, and we don't like to acknowledge that everything we care about eventually ends. And so is there something beyond this that we don't know? And
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what seeking is about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a 30-year search that took me through a lot of different traditions. I met Tibetan Rinpoches and shamans from Brazil and, you know, studied all the major religions and did yoga and did Zen meditation, Vipassana, and tried everything I could, including the whole business with Tony Robbins and Napoleon Hill, and just trying to get
mm-hmm.
it. How do you reach your peak potential, and what does it mean, and is there any way I can know anything, and does anybody know anything?
Mm-hmm.
And so it seemed to me that anybody who knew anything was already dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then 7 years ago, I had the great good luck of meeting Sadhguru.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent a week at my lake house, and he was doing inner work, and he was only available to me and his assistant in the evening, but when he came out, we went to an island on the middle of the lake and built a bonfire. And I got to ask him everything from stress and money to love and soulmates to reincarnation and death and
mm-hmm.
our life purpose and what's our life's calling and the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just one question. It was 7 nights by a bonfire from midnight till daylight, and it was all my questions I got to talk to him about.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was also his biography and how he'd get to be the way he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he took his story back 3 lifetimes, which I don't know of many people who could do that.
No. Mm-hmm.
And then what is this yoga he's teaching, and how does it evolve us, and why does it work when nothing else I tried really worked?
Mm-hmm.
And what does having an enlightened being behind it mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically it.
Well, you're very intent on finding enlightenment.
Yeah, it didn't go away for me, you know, and then after 30 years of trying, I read Autobiography of a Yogi when I was 14,
mm-hmm.
and it told me I wanted to get enlightened,
mm-hmm.
and at 14, I thought that's what I'm going to do,
mm-hmm.
and it described enlightenment as not being separate from the rest of the existence,
right?
And that a bigger experience was possible for us as humans, and a whole series of things happened to me, and I just felt like, you know, in this lifetime, I'd get enlightened, and then 30 years later, I got distraught that nothing happened, even though I tried. Then I met an enlightened being who somehow has the capacity to kick this off in us.
Mm-hmm.
And everything changed. You could put everything I did in the whole 30 years on one side and meeting him on the other. Fascinating.
I learned when I first started meditating that the ego sometimes does get in the way. It was like I was starved when I started meditating for that part of myself. And so I was meditating one night, and I must have had an out-of-body experience. And I felt like if I kept going, I would disappear into everything and no longer exist. And I was so frightened that I jumped out of my chair And the next night I tried to meditate again, and the same thing happened. And
so you were lucky you just didn't know it.
I what?
You were lucky you just didn't know it.
And so I thought, well, I don't want to meditate anymore because this is very frightening to me. And I really was not ready for what was happening. So,
and yet, the beings who are enlightened are the most blissful, the most joyful, the most fun.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what we're afraid of, except our ego probably doesn't like the idea.
Right, right. And I'm sure it was the ego that got in the way. When you met Sadhguru, how did you know that his approach to enlightenment was different than those that you had tried earlier?
You know, it's really hard to explain, but I used to have a feeling when I was a kid that I had this presence surrounding me.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds corny or weird, but at one point I told it to go away. Because I said, I'm not going to be able to do this little life if you're accompanying me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had an experience where I met Ram Dass, and he had just gotten back from being with his guru, and I had a meeting with him. And sitting across the room from him, he started turning into these other masters. I don't know if I had third eye vision or what was happening, but I was seeing him differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like whatever that presence was that I had seen when I was young, it was in his body across from me, and it knew me better than I knew myself.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I thought, oh, I understand it now. This is really me. I just got it covered up with all this stupid stuff. I know how to peel this onion now. I know what's behind it. And
mm-hmm.
this kind of witnessing consciousness that's with me, that's part of me, is the real me.
Mm-hmm.
And the smaller me, this ego me, I don't know what it is, but it's just a smaller part. You know, I had that experience with Ram Dass. All this was in the book, and it was a huge experience. And then I went to his house in California and said, are you my guru? I wasn't looking for a guru, didn't want one, because I thought that it wouldn't be fun and it'd be too disciplined. But after he showed me something, I thought maybe he was. And he said, no, when you meet your guru, you'll know it. People have experiences through me when their seeking is intense, but when you meet your real guru, you'll know it. And when I did meet Sadhguru and he walked in the room, it was that same essence that I'd known forever. And it was just kind of like an electric shock.
Cheryl, what would you say was the most significant insight during your time with Sadhguru?
Basically, everything I thought was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All this time I thought I was on a spiritual journey, I was making myself smaller. You know, this is just the way I am, I'm this way or that way, and learning about inclusiveness and all the silly ideas I had that were wrong. And the fact that things straightened out in me, I was having a pretty successful life at the time I met him. I had a second marriage and my own business and was making plenty of money, and it had come at a cost to my health somehow. And I was on 4 prescription medications. I had insomnia and hyperthyroidism and chronic fatigue. And 4 months after I took this program and started doing the yoga, everything that was wrong with my health went away, and I was in really good shape. So that was phenomenal. And just so many things that you should have already known, but he's just so damn logical, and you just suddenly get it.
Right. Are there other insights that you would like to share with the listeners?
One of the things I asked him was, how come I couldn't get enlightened? I was able to create a decent life using my mind and get a lot of things I wanted, but how come I couldn't make enlightenment happen? And he said that the mind is one tool, but it collects the residue of experiences, and it makes it dull. The place wasn't on the island when I asked this particular question, but we were at a talk he was giving, and there was a cake there, and there was a knife next to it, and he stuck the knife in the cake and pulled it out, and the knife had all this cake on it. And he said, see, the way this cake is on the knife is the way your past experiences clutter your mind.
Oh.
If you do the yoga I teach, it'll purify your mind, and then your mind's an effective tool. But he said, but you're not only a mind. You're a mind, you're a body, your emotions, your energy. They're like 4 wheels of a car. If you put those 4 wheels in the same direction, you're going to move a lot faster. And so the whole spiritual path, it's a dissolving all the stuff that keeps you from being who you truly are.
Right.
And I had no understanding before that you had to destroy a lot of things in yourself to get more spiritual.
What kind of feedback are you getting from people who've read your book?
Oh, my God, they're taking the yoga program. I'm running into them in India, all over the world, and they're saying, thank God you told me about this. And I'm having the same thing is happening to me now. They're not saying, you're nuts, why'd you tell us to come here?
Right.
They're saying, this is really working for me.
Oh.
It's really fun. It's getting me much more involved than I'd planned.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, because it works.
But you're happy you are involved. more than you planned.
Oh, I heard somebody say a long time ago, if you ever wanted to do something for somebody, if you could help them raise their consciousness, it's the most that you could do for them. And I find Sadhguru has the capacity to help us raise our consciousness, and getting behind his work is a way for me to help somebody raise their consciousness. So it's pretty big fun. Because you see somebody's face when you meet them, and you see after they do this for a while, they're off the alcohol, they're off the antidepressants, they're happy. It's really fun.
Right. It must be very rewarding.
It really is. I've gotten really swept up in it, much more than I ever expected.
As a nurse, I have experienced that through my lifetime of helping others and seeing them recover when they didn't think that they were going to.
Right.
How has your life changed since meeting Sadhguru and since publishing the book?
Well, my blood pressure being 75 over 35, it felt like all the blood was rushing out of my head when I was walking across the room. 6 months later, I did a Himalaya trek 9 miles straight up. This year, last month, I was in India for 3 weeks. I went to Indonesia for a week. I was back in Florida for 3 days. I'm in California for a week, Seattle. I'm not having jet lag. I'm having a whole lot of fun, and I couldn't even walk across the room when I got here. So it's pretty significant.
What spiritual practices and activities are you involved in now on a daily basis?
Well, the first program he teaches is inner engineering. And it's a 21-minute practice that involves some breathing and meditation. And it's out of the yogic sciences, and he put it together in a way that just works really well for the modern person. And that's a core practice. Because I'm so into this, and I go to India 1 month a year, and I've done all his programs, depending on what day it is, I can do anywhere from an hour to 3 hours worth of yoga a day, including, you know, postures and stuff. But the postures are mainly to get your body where you can sit. I couldn't sit without pain when I got here, and now I can sit for 2 hours without pain. Meditating. So it's a big difference.
Right. I took yoga when I was younger, but I haven't done it for many years. But I still meditate regularly. I do the affirmations, and I'm in a Search for God group, one of the Casey groups. But I don't do the yoga anymore.
I went to a Zen center some of my friends brought me, and the guy who was the monk there, has been there 25 years, asked if I could demonstrate how to sit cross-legged. So I think I'm obviously high on the yoga in addition to everything else you're doing. I got here 7 years ago, and I'm younger than when I got here.
Right, right. How can the audience have the same kind of life changes that you
have? They have to take the inner engineering program with Sadhguru, one of the teachers.
Oh, good. Can you tell us then about the ISHA Foundation and the programs?
Okay, Isha Foundation was started by Sadhguru, I think, some 25 years ago. And it's in India, and we've just opened up something in Tennessee. And then there's Isha teachers that are, several of them in California, and in Northern and Southern California, once a month there's a program with an Isha teacher. And it's IshaFoundation.org or MidnightsWithTheMystic.com, and both websites have all the information about when the programs are.
How about the East Coast?
The East Coast, periodically in the Boston area, you just have to check the website. I'm not exactly sure what's where. I know in New York and New Jersey.
And are there any requirements to attending these programs?
Nothing, There's people who have been 80 years old who've taken the program.
Well, they have.
I mean, I was broken, and I could do it. So anybody can do it.
Yeah. And what does the foundation hope to achieve by offering these programs?
We hope to raise the consciousness on the planet and get everybody happy and smiling.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And I
feel... He says you can't have a peaceful world without peaceful individuals. And then he says, peace is just the launching pad. It's not the final destination.
Well, I feel like that we're in a period where this could happen, whereas it might not have been possible in the past. And I'm hearing a lot of this from the different spiritual people that I have interviewed over the last couple of months.
I don't know about the past. I think it's always been possible, but we've needed the right kind of help. And I know he's able to do a lot, and I don't know who else is out there, but maybe people are getting more receptive now, too, because things don't feel as stable as they did before.
Right. Well, I think in terms of our own country, there was so much focus on money, power, greed, all of the non-spiritual things, and those things are all being moved away now. And I believe it's in preparation for a much more enlightened period of society moving toward 2012, which...
I don't know anything about that. I know the Mayan calendar, all that. All I know is right now my consciousness is in better shape than when I got here, and it's working. So whatever is happening astrologically or with the planet, doesn't matter. Right this minute, we can evolve ourselves.
Right.
That's what's significant to me. Right now, as hard as I tried for 30 years and couldn't do it, now it's happening. It's exciting.
Well, and I think in terms of mankind as a community, and I think that the time is more right now than it has been in the recent past for mass enlightenment. Whereas I think, you know, in the past, there's been individual enlightenment, but not necessarily.
Maybe so. More. I hope so.
And I hope so, too. That's why I'm so optimistic about the
future.
That's
why we're doing our part.
Yeah, you sure are, right. Is there anything else that you'd like to say, then, about your journey through life described in the book?
I want everybody to read my book, because I really laid it out there. You know, I've been through everything, divorce, wealth, no money, the whole gambit. And if we don't find a way in, life just isn't what it could be, you know? Everything else, even if you get it to work, is temporary. You got to get that. When I met Sadhguru, one of the things he said that really impressed me in his first talk that I sat in on was, you can live your life without being hostage to the external. And when he said it, I thought, is that really possible for me? Because when it went my way, I was happy, and when it didn't go my way, I was unhappy. I thought, can I really be okay if it's not going my way? And last year, my daughter-in-law was diagnosed with colon cancer and died 4 months later.
My mother
died, and my real estate business crashed. And these are things that would have devastated me before. And even though I still had a lot of grief about everything, it wasn't devastating, and I was still available to help everybody else involved, not so worried about what was happening to me. To know you're happier when everything's fine is one thing. To know how you would have been before and how you are now is something else.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, can you tell us the title of the book again? And
Midnights with the Mystic.
And your website and how people can reach you and Sadhguru.
It's Midnights with an S with the mystic.com. And you can email me at simonecheryl@gmail.com. And on my website, there's an Ask Sadhguru question. You can approach him through the website. And then the Isha Foundation and my website have his schedule if you want to sit with him.
I appreciate very much, you know, you taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Colin. You're so open. I really like it.
Thank you, Cheryl. I appreciate it. And I hope to get to the foundation one day and find out what it's all about for
myself. I hope
you
will, and I hope you'll email me after you finish my book.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, great. Thank you again.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great day and everything.
And you too.
Okay, thank you.
My second guest is Padma, who is one of Canada's best-known teachers of meditation and yoga, and writes and hosts a daily national television series called Living Yoga with Padma. She studied yoga and meditation in the Himalayas of India and has been authorized to teach yoga and meditation by the International Institute of India. Padma was director of the Padma Yoga and Meditation Center in Vancouver, BC, and currently leads courses and workshops. She is expanding her classes and workshops to the United States. Additional information can be found at www.padmameditation.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Padma, and I'm happy to have you here.
Well, thank you very much, Carl.
I'm wanting to take advantage of your expertise about yoga and meditation and ask questions that I think will be of interest to our listeners. Some people think yoga is a physical activity, but I believe it is more holistic. How do you conceptualize yoga?
It's a good question, Carl. I actually do agree with you that yoga is a holistic program. There are so many different practices under the umbrella name of yoga. There are certainly practices which are very physical. And even in the physical practices, there are many different types of physical practice. so you have more athletic and aerobic and hard-working styles of yoga. And you've also got gentler, more restorative and slower styles of the physical yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So even besides that, though, there are completely other practices of yoga, such as a whole range of different breath work exercises
mm-hmm.
that work on the kind of subtle energies of breath and life force energy. And then also within yoga, there's a whole range of meditation practices,
mm-hmm.
which have to do with more the mind field and bringing balance and strength into the mind. As well, there's lots of yoga philosophy, and there's a yoga diet, there's yoga ethics and lifestyle, there's yoga astrology, there's all kinds
mm-hmm.
of different branches
mm-hmm.
of yoga, all under this big umbrella
mm-hmm.
called yoga.
That's interesting. I practiced yoga when I was younger, and at that time I was able to do the shoulder stand.
Oh, good.
I never progressed to the headstand. But I would hesitate to do any of that now because of my age. Can yoga be done by people of all ages?
It really is a matter of what your personal physical conditioning and strength is at any given time in
mm-hmm.
life. I mean, I don't really see it as dependent on age
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
It simply is how strong is your body at this moment and what poses are you able to do safely.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe a 20-year-old is not ready to do a headstand, you know,
mm-hmm.
not relative to age.
Oh.
And in the same moment, my teacher in India was 80 years old, and he could pop up into a headstand at any moment, and he would. So it's really a matter of practice and building your strength and capacity and doing what's appropriate for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe you've answered what I was going to ask next, and that is, are there specific postures for different ages?
Yeah, well, in general, I find that younger people like to do more flowing and energetic styles because
mm-hmm.
they've got that extra energy to burn off,
mm-hmm.
and they like the feeling of exercising rigorously.
Mm-hmm.
I find at my age, and my students who are even older than me, we tend to like things a little bit more steady,
mm-hmm.
More of the poses on the floor, maybe supported on the back, against the wall, things which are not as fast-moving
mm-hmm.
and rigorous.
Mm-hmm.
I find that there's not so much need for that.
Would you suggest specific postures for people over age 65?
Well, like I said before, it's a matter of your personal conditioning and your capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been doing yoga for many, many years, then you know you can be doing like backbends and headstands right into your 80s,
mm-hmm.
as I said. Right? It's
mm-hmm.
possible. And it's something for people to know that if I keep up with this yoga constantly every day or you know as much as possible, I'll be able to bring this, you know, many of the poses into my, you know, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would say in general that you need to be very attentive and aware of your body's capacity. For example, if you know that you've got a hip trouble or a knee trouble or neck trouble,
mm-hmm.
you really have to be respectful to your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever are into a pose that hurts you particularly, you just gently back out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And best to have a teacher kind of guiding you as to, you know, is this a good idea for your body in particular? I mean, for me, I love a lot of work on the back, as
mm-hmm.
I said, a lot of the pulling the knees into the chest while you're lying on your back, drawing one knee in at a time and then changing the other knee in. This
mm-hmm.
is really great for the back, the hips, the knees. Another nice pose is to roll over into a child pose. And just stretch your low back down, your hips down to your heels and child. This is really good for the low back. I also encourage my older students on hands and knees. You know, if the knees are padded nicely on a cushion,
mm-hmm.
they can do cat stretches, just flexing the back, up, arching, and then flexing, kind of keeping that spine flexible and moving, keeping the shoulders and hips agile and mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Find that's really important. And also standing poses, just side stretches, half moon stretches to the sides. I also encourage them to put their hands on a table and kind of go into a table pose, like a 90-degree angle with the back flat. This is really great for stretching out those shoulders and the hips and the back. And then we do some gentle, you know, lunges, taking one step forward and just stretching out the back of the hamstrings for the legs. Often people have spent a lifetime working at a desk or something, and their legs are pretty stiff and tight. So lots of hamstring stretches with gentle lunges or something. But oh, hanging onto a table or chair is always a good idea. I also find balancing poses useful. So often I'll have my students stand in a doorway and hang on to the door frame, and then just practice drawing one knee up and practice finding their balance standing on one leg. I find particularly some people start to feel they're losing their balance a little bit more as time goes on. So practicing standing on one leg is really good for core stability and the whole just muscular conditioning of maintaining balance, all those little mini muscles all through the body which constantly are working to maintain our balance. We can exercise those.
Do people usually warm up before they do yoga, or is it something they can just move into?
Well, if you're moving into a gentle practice, then you just start gentle and you stay gentle the whole practice. It's nice. I always, you're very aware at the beginning of warming up the hips, maybe a gentle forward fold, warming up the shoulders, some shoulder rolls, warming up the neck, just gently side to side, and being mostly aware of your body, what's going on with your joints, the hips, the shoulders, and making sure that you do a little bit of gentle movement in each area, basically to bring your attention to your own body, so that you can be aware of whether there's a trouble in the hip or a trouble in the shoulder today, and there's just more awareness of what you're working with. Kind of a tuning in before you go forward into any more rigorous poses. Tune in first.
What are the benefits of yoga for people of all ages?
Oh, the benefits are just so many. I could list a huge long list. I mean, physically, the yoga exercises are designed to stimulate your life force, so you feel more vibrant. They stimulate your immune system, so you don't get as many colds. I haven't had a cold for years.
Oh, you haven't?
No. It's like everyone around me is always sick and coughing, and I just don't get sick.
Oh, that's great.
It is great, and I'm sure it's because I just keep my body... through all these yoga poses, just keep it healthy and vibrant. I find that it helps your digestive system. A lot of the poses are designed for assisting your digestion, which is key to all other aspects of your health. Many of the poses are designed for the spine and keeping that back flexible, which is excellent for your nervous system. All of your nerves kind of come back to the spinal column. So the yogis say a healthy spine is a healthy person. So your stomach, your spine, your muscle, your muscular system, which helps support your skeleton. Also your respiratory system with the breathing exercises and integration of breath and body. It really expands and keeps your lungs strong, keeps your blood well oxygenated, and when your blood is oxygenated, your brain is healthier and happier.
Right.
There's a lot of poses which are called inversions, so your head is down, and that's really good also for your brain, just getting blood to your brain, blood to your heart. Many of the poses with feet up in the air also very good for relieving varicose veins or other troubles with the legs. And also just the whole back, having the back supported on the floor, on the wall. These are great poses for a lot of emotional situations as well. Often the back indicates to us that there's some kind of emotional stress going on. So when we do poses with the back well supported on the floor or on the wall, it tends to steady and balance and strengthen our emotions as well.
Can people learn yoga by themselves, or should they have an instructor?
Well, there are so many good books out there and DVDs. I mean, I've produced DVDs myself for people to use on their own. But I learned myself with a teacher, and I've always continued to find, you know, great inspiration from new teachers. And so I would highly recommend that you learn from someone who has already learned a lot and allow them to pass on their wisdom to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great fast track to learning. And so to learn as much as you can from others, but then also to have a home practice and do a little bit on your own at home is also fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Now, where would people find instructors, and what should they look for in an instructor?
Well, you can find instructors at most of the yoga centers around town. I know most cities now have some yoga centers, and usually the teachers they hire should have been checked out and be qualified.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a matter of what personality clicks with you. You know, one teacher might suit you better just by their personality, or maybe you find their education is what you want to learn. What you should look out for and avoid is any teacher which is harsh or aggressive or makes you feel bad in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely contradictory to the main purpose of yoga, which is to cultivate nonviolence and gentleness and compassion. So if a teacher is shouting or aggressive or harsh or any way makes you feel bad and doesn't support you, then I would suggest looking for a different teacher.
Right. I'm interested in your DVDs. I noticed that you had DVDs on yoga. Can you tell us about them and where we can find them?
Yes, thank you. A couple of years ago, I produced two DVDs. One is called Mountain, and I really wanted to make a DVD which was a good, solid, foundational practice. That's why I called it Mountain Pose. It's a solid foundation, and it's a very accessible DVD. There's about 50 minutes of video of me doing yoga poses, beautifully shot here in Vancouver. And so you can follow right along with those yoga poses, and it takes you through a very safe, solid, foundational daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
On that same DVD, I've also added a whole audio section. And in that audio section, I've included guided breath work, guided meditation, some guided yogic chanting, and even a little talk on yogic philosophy. So there's a whole second section of other audio practices of yoga, and that's the Mountain DVD. The second one is Ocean DVD, and this is a more working with the fluidity of the energy in us, the movement of breath, the movement of the life force energies. And again, there's about 45, 50 minutes of video yoga practice on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another whole section of audio, breath work, meditation, chanting, and philosophy. And both of those DVDs are available on my personal website, which is padmameditation.com.
Do you want to spell that out?
Okay, sure. It's PADMAMEDITATION, padmameditation.com.
Great, thank you. Are there other things you'd like to talk about as far as yoga?
Well, I would just love to say that it's a fabulous practice for everybody, and that there is an entry point for anybody at any age in any situation in life, whether you're, you know, healthy and vibrant and strong, or whether you are going through some other situation or crisis. There's always a point where you can enter yoga and there's something there for you.
Mm-hmm.
I personally started yoga after I'd tumbled and hurt my back very badly. So I started yoga basically for the therapeutic effects.
Mm-hmm.
My back was very, very sore, and it took me several years, but I continued to gently practice the yoga poses, and my back completely healed. And
wonderful.
Not only that, I developed a stronger back than I'd had in the first place. So I came in like a bit of a cripple to yoga, but it helped me heal and get strong, and I've continued, and now I realize all of the other health benefits of the practice, and also just how good it makes me feel, how happy. You know, so I just love to encourage everyone to give it a try, no matter what your circumstance. And I'm sure that you'll be able to find some teacher somewhere who can give you the right information for you at this time.
Mm-hmm. Are there books or references that you would like to recommend?
Well, I could say my own website's a reference there. I have a recommended reading list on
good.
Some books. Mm-hmm. There's some classics like, you know, the Iyengar book of yoga, Light on Yoga. It's one that everyone's used. There's so many books on yoga right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would pick one up with some nice pictures and some clear descriptions. And there's also lots of other books on, for example, the breathing techniques or the meditation or philosophy. There's countless books on all those other aspects of yoga as well as the physical part.
Mm-hmm. You're also an expert on meditation, and so I'd like to ask a few questions for our listeners about meditation.
Sure.
What is the essence of meditation?
For me, the essence of meditation is the practice of getting back in contact with your real self, really feeling that you've brought your attention back to your own essential core. And that good feeling of when you're really true to yourself and you know where you're standing and where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the opposite of kind of being lost and scattered and disarrayed and out of balance,
mm-hmm.
and confused, like a lot of us are running around in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation is the opposite, the antidote to all of that. It's bringing yourself back to a still place where you feel your center, your balance, your clarity of mind, and your confidence in yourself.
Mm-hmm. And how can meditation keep us healthy?
Well, meditation can keep us actually physically healthy because it allows us to take some time, firstly, just to check in with what's going on. If you take a few moments just to check in with your body, and ask, you know, what's going on here? Is there something I need to be paying attention to? When we just run through the day, often we overlook the early warning signs, the signals that something's going on. So meditation, just as an awareness practice, helps to keep us in touch with our body, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, just sitting still is really, really healthy. It
right.
feels really good once you find a comfortable position to sit in. The body just loves to be in a still place, but not necessarily asleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's a waking stillness. And somehow that feeling in the body is deeply, deeply soothing and just gives a positive feeling through the whole body, which inspires, the immune system, the hormonal system. Everything just feels safe and good, and your cells respond to that environment of safety. And also mentally, I believe that meditation helps you have more mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So instead of running after our thoughts and kind of getting wound up and confused in them, you have some time just to sit down, kind of clear the blackboard, clear the slate for a while, and get back to a space of just calm and focus and ease in yourself, uncluttered, unbusy. It's a very strong place for the mind to come back to and feel balanced and healthy.
Mm-hmm. Are there other effects of meditation beyond those that you mentioned earlier?
Well, meditation can also lead to a lot of personal insight into ourselves. As you sit in meditation, you often become more aware of how your own mind functions. And you can see that more objectively. So when you're sitting in meditation, you start to notice more objectively your own mind habits and patterns, and you start to see your own reactions and how you interact with other people, what your kind of thinking patterns are. So there's a lot of clarity about how we present ourselves and how we interact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then as you sit even longer, you start to have even deeper, I would say, spiritual insights into the essence of your own being as a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
And that clarity starts to unfold by itself, sense of yourself as a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
And in your conscious mind.
So meditation also is a more holistic approach.
Absolutely, from physical wellness and the health of the metabolism, right to our personalities and our social behaviors, right to our own understanding of ourselves as a personality, and even deeper into our awareness of spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, amazing, amazing.
Do you have any references on your site for meditation?
I have actually, Carl. I've got a reading list on my website there. I've just a few different authors that I've enjoyed. And so if you read one of the books of one of these authors, then you can go ahead and research more of what that teacher has written.
Would you like to give us your website again?
Oh, thank you. My website is www.padmameditation. That's spelled P-A-D-M-A, Padma, Meditation, meditation.com, padmameditation.com.
And is it best for people to have an instructor or to work with a group when they're learning meditation?
Oh, yes, I definitely think so. I think that the best thing to do is to get together with an established group that's already meditating and learn with them and sit with them for a while. And you might even try a few different groups to find out which one suits your personality best. And then to be regular, to stick with that and to develop a steady personal practice that you can do then on your own, in your own home, ideally every single day. You do some 20 minutes or 15 minutes of sitting in stillness.
One group I found that was very helpful when I started meditating, and that was the Friends Church. In our area, it's what they call a traditional, but they have services where they sit in silence until the spirit moves them, and then they rise and they speak.
Beautiful.
And so it's a meditation group, and I found that a very good group to meditate with. And then, as I said, the Search for God group was another group that was very good. Do you have other groups that you would recommend that people might find?
Yeah. There are many different yogic meditation groups around, but again, it's kind of like what the quality of that particular group of people also. I also like a Zen meditation group that I sit with often. It's with Norman Fisher. He's out of San Francisco, and he's got a group called Everyday Zen. I believe his website's everydayzen.org. And so they do very good Zen meditation sits and retreats. I would recommend that. And also, I myself am developing a meditation teacher training program, which I'm just initiating now in Vancouver, but there are plans to take it right across Canada and into the United States. So that'll be exciting for me, too.
And then people can also find that on your website?
That one is actually out of a business called Y Yoga. It's yyoga.ca. And on that website, you can find out about my meditation programs and my meditation teacher training programs, actually.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to say about meditation?
Well, I would love to say that meditation is not as difficult or hard as people often think it is. It's actually a really deeply therapeutic and joyful experience once you get into it. And just the simplest practice of sitting still every day will have huge and profound effects on the positive quality of your life. And it doesn't matter which sect you belong to, whether it's Christian or Zen or yogic, the simplicity of simply sitting and having that quiet time of contemplation and reflection is super healthy for the body and for the mind and for our spirit.
Great. Thank you, Padma. It's been great having you on the show, and I look forward to having you again.
Well, thank you very, very much, Carl. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.